From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Tonight is the beginning of a Chicago that truly invests in all of its people.
Progressive Democrat Brandon Johnson defeated fellow Democrat Paul Vallis in a close runoff race. He will now take Mayor Lori Lightfoot's seat. Johnson is a teachers union organizer and county commissioner.
Now, you've heard me say this before, Chicago. Well, you're going to keep hearing it because the heart of this movement has always been about investing in people.
Fresh off his win, the new mayor-elect crediting in part young voters for his victory. Current numbers from the Chicago Board of Elections shows voters 18 to 34 cast more than 9,500 more ballots than they did in the February 28th election.
The only pathway forward in our great city is together. Whether it's quality schools, affordable or equitable economic development, the solutions we adopt and implement must work for all Chicagoans.
And that's Paul Vallis. He was defeated Tuesday night by Brandon Johnson, who will be Chicago's next mayor. It's a big victory for progressives, but there's also a big job ahead. Chicago dealing with crime, a lot of financial problems as well. We'll break down the race and what happened to lift Johnson to the win, and also some of the challenges that lie ahead. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Along with us today, we have Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And back with us, we have Heather Sharon from WTTW's Chicago Tonight. And Heather, thanks for joining us once again.
I'm happy to be here.
So you followed this mayor's race, Heather, from start to finish. And now that it's over, I guess, what is the takeaway?
Well, I think that it shows you that Chicago has a truly progressive electorate, and it is an electorate that is looking for different solutions to the city's problems of crime and violence and public safety. There were many issues that Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson fundamentally disagreed on, but of course, the number one issue was what to do about the surge of crime and violence that started right at the beginning of the pandemic, all the way back 3 years ago, and really has yet to recede. And Paul Vallis promised to hire as many new cops as quickly as possible, while Brandon Johnson called for really a reimagining of how the city protects its residents and how it serves its residents. And by a narrow but not insignificant margin, Chicagoans endorsed Johnson's approach, which really promises to be a significant change from not just Lori Lightfoot, but also the administrations of Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Richard M. Daley. So, it's a cliche to say after an election that a new era of politics is starting, but that's really what's about to happen in Chicago.
Well, at this time last week, we sat down to record our show. It looked like Brandon Johnson might be in a bit of trouble. It looked as though it would be a tight race, but maybe Vallis was going to eke this out and pull it out. We heard at the start there some numbers about young people turning out to vote, more turning out in this runoff election than did the primary. But was that the difference? Can we tell at this point what made the difference for Johnson?
So it's a little bit early to know for sure. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 mail ballots that have not yet been received by the Board of Election Commissioners, and they can arrive as late as April 18th. So we don't have final results yet, but we do know that Brandon Johnson was able to expand the base of support that he had in the first round of voting to include pretty much overwhelming victories on the south and the west sides of Chicago, as well as the north lakefront. And I was watching specifically the 44th ward, which includes Lakeview and Wrigleyville. And right now, Brandon Johnson is narrowly winning that ward, which is represented by Alderman Tom Tunney, who campaigned very hard for Paul Vallis, sort of focused on those issues of crime and violence and need to expand the police department. The fact that Brandon Brandon Johnson won not only all of the North Lakefront wards, but also narrowly appears to have won the 44th ward, I think is pretty significant, because that meant that those votes combined with strengths along the Milwaukee Avenue corridor on the northwest side, as well as a significant base of support in the Latino communities of Little Village and Pilsen, really meant that Paul Vallis's only path to victory was to win a significant share of the votes on the south side, and that simply did not happen. And now we're in a situation where you had a number of veteran alder people who traced their roots to the Daley administration, who backed Vallis only to see just about 20% of their wards follow their lead. And that is going to make for some interesting politics at City Hall once the new term begins.
I do want to get into that in a moment, but Charlie, let me bring you in on this. You followed a lot of Chicago mayoral elections through the years. What was your takeaway from this one?
Well, I think what Heather mentioned already was a big one. This, in a sense, this was, and I think Governor Pritzker referred to this was kind of a sea change. The old guard, who largely backed Paul Vallis, kind of got swept away by the new, younger, progressive movement. One of the things I found interesting, Vallis hammered really hard on the safety issue. We got to get more cops, get them out on the street, got to crack down on crime. Some of the analyses I saw went over and compared precinct results by crime statistics. And some of the areas that had really high crime rates went very solidly for Brandon Johnson. And some of the areas that went heavily for Paul Vallis, like on the northwest side, the southwest side, they had relatively low crime rates. And so it occurred to me that the folks who are in those high crime areas kind of accepted or agreed with the message that you don't just throw cops on the street, you also go back to the roots of crime. Better education, better employment opportunities, childcare, all the kinds of sort of human resource inputs that would help build up a community rather than just throwing in stormtroopers. Another thing that was interesting in my mind was the greater increased turnout for younger people. The preliminary results, and this would be as the close of the polls on election night, there were something like close to 30,000 additional voters younger than 44 than turned out in February. On the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum, there were more than 10,000 fewer votes from people who were 55 or older. And I think that made a big difference, the fact that the Johnson operation was able to get out its younger people, and they were still a relatively small percentage overall, but that's a big change if you think about it. That's like 40,000 vote swing in terms of the age groups.
So people may not have liked what Paul Vallis was saying about crime and may have gone to Johnson's approach, but Heather, Johnson, now that he's taking over, he still has to keep the city safe, and he has to work with the city's police department. That's got to be one of the biggest challenges he faces. So what's he been saying in the days after the election regarding that?
Well, you know, he spoke briefly to reporters in a series of one-on-one interviews that he has been holding, in which he's really sort of said that the first task of his administration is to unite the people of Chicago. And that, you know, is really, I think, he sees as job number one. And he met yesterday with Lori Lightfoot in her office to begin the transition. And he said that he was grateful for her support in sort of helping to bring the city together. So he no doubt sees that as job number one. But not only does he have to sort of focus on any sort of, you know, public safety threats or anything like that, he has to nearly immediately begin to make good on those promises, as I said, to sort of reimagine public safety. So there's going to be, I tried to ask him yesterday about whether he would in fact cancel the contract, the city's contract with ShotSpotter, which saw its stock really take a beating because of Brandon Johnson's election. And he's going to sort of face calls to immediately end the police department's gang database that officials under Lightfoot have been trying to reconstitute. So those are, I think, sort of at the very top of his public safety agenda, while he is continuing to face sort of, I think, significant criticism and skepticism from the leader of the police union, John Catanzaro, who, of course, backed Paul Vallis and warned that if Brandon Johnson was elected, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 police officers would resign and blood, quote, would run in the streets. So he has no small tasks ahead of him, but I think that he feels like the narrow but significant victory that he won, as I said, really gives him sort of, you know, the power to begin making the changes that he campaigned on.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon. Charlie, you've known Paul Vallis a long time, covering him and dealing with him when he was involved with state government. We talked about the fact that maybe there were some mistakes made there, or at least he did not read the room well enough when it comes to how people viewed his stances on crime. This is a Democratic city. It seemed like one of his biggest challenges was trying to convince many people he was a Democrat, and I'm not sure everyone bought it. Looking back, were there mistakes made there?
Yeah, I think there were, and some of it was, for example, he went to one of these, what's a charitable way to put it, one of these groups that are founded, far-right groups that have kind of morphed from being anti-masks in school into, we don't want our kids learning about the checkered past history of the United States. We don't want them to be exposed to any kind of sex education. And he went to one of their events, later said, well, I didn't know what they were all about, or I wouldn't have done it. He had very strong support from John Catanzaro, who is the head of the Chicago Police Union, who is a, I think it'd be fair to say, who is an ultra-conservative firebrand in his own right. And I think Vallis probably concentrated too heavily on the crime issue and didn't really get out very clearly what else he wanted to do. Now, there's a real difference, like in education, there's a real difference between Paul Vallis's views and Brandon Johnson's. Brandon Johnson, of course, is a teacher. He, I think, still is a member of the teachers union, although he said that he would resign once he was elected. I don't know if he's put his resignation in yet. Paul Vallis, on the other hand, when he was the head of the Chicago schools, he closed a lot of schools. He's a firm believer in charter schools and tuition scholarships at non-public schools, those kinds of things, which are anathema to the teachers union. And I guess looking back on it, maybe Vallis should have gone negative on Johnson right from the get-go instead of being as focused on crime. But it is, I think, and one of the things that occurred to me looking at the results, Vallis had a lot of the old-time leaders, the sort of the remnants of the old Daley machine behind him. And he was endorsed by people who are well-recognized Democrats, but who are also kind of old school. Jesse White, for example, nobody questions that Jesse is a Democrat, and he was there with Vallis. Dick Durbin, he was there with Vallis, and he described him as a lifelong Democrat. But those are kind of the older generation. My sense was that some of the younger, more progressive political leaders in Chicago, and Heather, you know this better than I, were very much in Johnson's corner. One of the things that really struck me, and I think it was in a piece that you did, Heather, was the grassroots organization, the United Working Families, reported that they sent 2 million text messages. They made 1 million phone calls. They knocked on 500,000 doors to get voters out for Johnson. And that strikes me as amazing. And it occurred to me that, say, 30, 40 years ago, that's basically what the old Chicago machine did, the daily operation. And they are pretty much gone now. And so kind of taking their place as being the group that puts the boots on the ground, it's the teachers union.
That's right. I think that Vallis, up until just the last moments of the campaign, was still telling voters that he is a lifelong Democrat. And it was not sort of coincidental that he spent the final full day of the campaign shaking hands at a downtown CTA stop with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who, of course, is the number two ranking Democrat in the United States Senate. But Charlie is 100% right. The Democrats that Vallis had in his corner, by and large, all began their careers just as he did, as an aide or a supporter or or somehow connected to the administration of Mayor Richard M. Daley. And I think that by the end of the campaign, the contrast between the two campaigns just could not have been greater on all of the issues and also on the style. But also, Johnson's campaign was really fueled by this notion that it was time for a generational change in Chicago politics. And Brandon Johnson, who just turned 47 years old, will be the first mayor of Chicago to belong to Generation X. And of course, Paul Vallis, like Lori Lightfoot, they're both members of the baby boom generation. And that will have a huge impact, I think, on who staffs a Johnson administration and how they approach the issues. And I think that it really can't be understated that this was a young campaign led by a young candidate that appears to have been pushed over the finish line by young Chicago voters.
The composition of the city council is going to shift, become much more diverse, and become much more progressive or left-leaning, if you will. I mean, back in the day when I first started covering this stuff, the city council was basically all yes people for Mayor Richard J. Daley. It didn't matter whether you were black or white, with one or two exceptions, you were a yes guy. And it used to be, we would say in the legislature, even most of the black folks from Chicago, the lawmakers, their voting record was exactly the same as the white ethnics. You couldn't tell any difference between them. The only difference between them and, say, an Irish American lawmaker or an Italian American lawmaker or a Polish American lawmaker was that the black guy had a little darker skin tone, but that was the only difference. And now that, of course, has changed. And I forget the numbers, and Heather, you would probably have them right at your fingertips, but we're going to have a council, and if I'm not mistaken, there's only going to be like 14 white people, and the rest are going to be people of color. And I think that is really a good sign to more closely reflect the demographics of the city itself.
Yeah, it will also be significantly more female than previous city councils have been. In a number of races where the veteran alderperson did not run for re-election, they will be replaced by a younger, more progressive woman, including on the west side in the 12th ward, where Alderman George Cardenas will be replaced by Julio Ramirez, and in Humboldt Park, where Roberto Maldonado will be replaced by Jesse Fuentes, who will be also the latest addition to the city council's LGBTQ caucus. So the generational change I'm talking about is happening not just in the mayor's office, but also on the city council, which will be really interesting because there's already been sort of a movement that began during the Lightfoot era for the city council not to operate like you described it operating during the Daley administrations, as a rubber stamp, as yes guys, and instead functioning as an independent, truly legislative body determined to set policy for the city. And it will be fascinating to watch Brandon Johnson sort of navigate that desire for more independence and more power, also at a time where he has a number of high profile initiatives that, if he's going to be successful, has to be endorsed by the city council. So I think that we are also going to see a significant expansion of power for the Democratic Socialists on the city council, led by Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who is set to become housing committee chair, and Alderwoman Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez, who is set to lead the health committee. They will be joined by the seventh Democratic Socialist, Angela Clay, who will replace, who is a woman of color, who will replace Alderman James Kappelman in Uptown. So that is just another indication that Brandon Johnson's victory, along with the results of the city council runoffs, really sort of have swept out sort of the what remained of the Daley administration and the Emanuel administration. And I know we've spent most of the time of Lori Lightfoot's time in office talking about sort of her, you know, sort of reformer credentials and sort of her, you know, sort of where she fits on that progressive scale. But of course, she began her career in Chicago governance as an appointee of Mayor Richard M. Daley. And really, for the first time since the 1950s, almost, you have a mayor who did not come up through the Daley machine, who is about to become mayor of Chicago. And, you know, I cannot emphasize what just a dramatic change that is going to be.
The generational change. Ed Burke didn't run for re-election, and he's under indictment, and who knows, he may spend his final days in prison. But he had been in the 14th ward forever as the alderman. He's being replaced by a young individual, I believe. Is it pronounced Halo Gutierrez?
That's right, yes. She's 34, and of course, Ed Burke was elected in 1969 to the city council, so she had not even been born. She was 20 years old when she was 20. I mean, it's just a massive generational shift. She has never known a city council in the 14th ward that did not feature Ed Burke, and she is, you know, 34 years old. It's a crazy statistic.
And Heather, one thing we haven't touched on but was mentioned at the start of the show is the financial problems facing the city. Mm-hmm. And many cities face this. Brandon Johnson, it's beyond just the policing. It's beyond just dealing with the school system. This is a real key for him as well. What are the challenges there, and what has he proposed about them?
Well, the city is likely facing under sort of a flat economic scenario, so no big boom, no big recession, a deficit of somewhere in the neighborhood of $450 million in its 2024 budget. So that is not massive by comparison, but it's also not small. And that will mean that Johnson will have to make some tough decisions. Now, during the campaign, Johnson put out a budget plan that called for a significant number of new taxes, somewhere totaling in the neighborhood of $800 million. Now, the city council cannot enact most of those tax hikes because they would require a change in state law. And Johnson has promised not to raise property taxes. And the truth of the matter of Chicago finances, and Charlie knows this as well as I do, is that really property taxes are the quickest and most effective way for Chicago officials to raise revenue. Now, Johnson has closed off that option for himself, which means that he is going to face a much, much more difficult, trouble than he otherwise would. The other sort of wrinkle to the city's financial situation is sort of the coming end of the COVID-19 finances. So I have been unable to get the Lightfoot administration to tell me how much of the COVID relief funds it had spent through the end of 2022. So I imagine that one of the first things that a Johnson budget team would want to know is, hey, how much money from the COVID relief do we have left? And can we repurpose some of that to meet some of the promises that we made during the campaign? So I will be watching for that very closely. Johnson will have less control over the financial crisis looming at the Chicago Public Schools and at the CTA, because of course those bodies are funded differently than the city itself. Although Johnson will be able to replace Mayor Lori Lightfoot's appointees to the Chicago Board of Education. And I think a lot of people are watching to see what he does with the CTA, which of course is still struggling to recover its level of ridership pre-pandemic while coping with problems with crime and cleanliness. And I think that he will certainly be facing calls to make significant change on the CTA's board and perhaps with its leadership.
Only about 30 seconds here, but Heather, I'll let you have the last word because I'm trying to find out what is going to happen with Lori Lightfoot. Have we heard yet what her next role is going to be?
We have not. She has not held a formal press conference since before the February 28th election. She did not take questions with Brandon Johnson after or before their meeting at City Hall yesterday. She's playing whatever is next for her very close to her vest. But remember, she was a lawyer for many, many years, and there is no doubt that there would be many Chicago firms that would be happy to welcome back a former Chicago mayor onto their staff.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll start with you.
Okay, well, the flash index for March came out this week, and it showed that the index fell a teeny bit from 103.4 in February to 103.1 in March. And that's kind of been the pattern of the last 6 months or so, where there's been modest growth while there's talk by economists about an impending recession. But as Professor Fred Geertz at the U of I mentions in every one of these flash index reports, any value above 100 indicates expansion. And his comment was, Illinois national economies appear to have withstood the uncertainty of the recent banking problems. And real tax receipts for the last 12 months are still running ahead of the previous 12-month period, he said.
All right. And Heather.
Brandon Johnson has had to hit the ground running. It's a cliche, but it's true. He will take office 41 days after winning the runoff election over Paul Vallas, which is the shortest transition between two Chicago mayors in Chicago history and is almost a full week shorter than the period between when Rahm Emanuel gave way to Lori Lightfoot back in 2019. And Johnson, after he met with Lori Lightfoot yesterday, on Thursday, I should say, spoke about what that transition means. And he noted that also for the first time in Chicago history, a mayoral administration led by a Black gay woman is giving way to an administration led by a Black man. And I think in a time where we have nationally seen backlashes and racially charged sort of politics, it is, I think, worth taking a moment to reflect on that. In Chicago, is really charting new territory and sort of cementing its role as sort of, you know, the crown jewel of Black political power in America.
All right. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharone with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. You can get a podcast of our show. It's at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app and iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.